And now, it's back to Refilwe Mpakanyane on 702.
It is 15 minutes past six, and kicking off our conversations this morning is one that it focuses on men's mental health. November is Men's Mental Health Awareness Month, and yesterday was International Men's Day. Now, the World Health Organization reported that in 2019, 13,774 suicides were reported in South Africa, and of these deaths, 10,861 were men. So this morning we're looking at men's mental health awareness and the need to speak about, the need for men to speak about, engage with, and I guess be upfront about their mental health struggles. And of course, what gets in the way of having those conversations is the biggest and most important question. Joining us to unpack all of this is Kerry Rudman, who is CEO of the Brain Harmonics Group. Welcome to Weekend Breakfast, Kerry. Thank you so much for making yourself available.
Oh, thank you, Rufina. Great to be here.
An absolute pleasure. Kerry, the genesis of our conversation, as I said, is, of course, the fact that November is Men's Mental Health Awareness Day, and yesterday was International Men's Day. But we also know that men suffer particularly high rates from burnout, and it's a health crisis that apparently we aren't talking about enough or addressing enough. So let's just start there when it comes to burnout and how it pertains to the state of men's mental health in general, in our context. Just define burnout for us, please, if you would. Is it a medical condition?
It is, definitely, and it's not something that happens suddenly. It's ongoing, long-term stress. I think after COVID, there have been so many pressures financially, so people working for a company have to prove themselves. People working for themselves have to work harder. Mm-hmm. We've got load shedding on top of that, so people are squeezing hours in all over the time. You know, working at night, working longer hours. So it's ongoing stress that eventually takes its toll.
Yeah. Ongoing stress that eventually takes its toll. And the emotional components of that look like what? Because is it possible to, yes, have to work under difficult circumstances and conditions, look after your family, look after yourself, as you said, prove yourself, but still not get to a point where you're burnt out, and you know, we'll get to matters of suicide and taking one's life or self-harming.
Absolutely. I think the biggest problem is that when women are experiencing this, women often talk about their emotions and they'll turn to their friends or their peers and they'll discuss it. When men are taught from very, very little not to be talking about their emotions, to be a man, don't cry, you know, they're taught from tiny, this is just inbred in our culture. So men are much more likely not to ask for help or to seek help because they don't want to be seen as less than. So they suck it up. They just keep going. And that's where the problem lies, is that they're not being supported because they're not communicating.
To that point, men are more likely, 7% more likely to attempt to get through burnout alone rather than seeking outside help. And of course, men, I'm just looking at figures from the UK, making up to three quarters of suicides in Britain. I've mentioned the South African figures. Burnout, you know, when one is experiencing burnout, when one does need help, where do you turn to? Because ostensibly, you still have to put food on the table. You still have to go out and, you know, earn money.
Correct. So I think the biggest problem in South Africa is that people aren't turning to any option to get help. They are encountering burnouts, and then what happens to them once they're there? We don't really have the correct support to help them through the burnout at the end of it, but the cost of it is so high. Mm. If men were able to balance before they got there. So look for help in terms of if they can't communicate, what I do obviously is a much better option because they don't have to speak about their problems.
Yeah.
But they need to find some kind of balance. So if it's going to the gym or meditating or just taking time out, they need to balance the stress that they're encountering in some way.
Going to the gym is ostensibly finding some kind of release valve, is something that they can do for themselves. I wonder, I've been reading quite a few articles in preparation for our conversation this morning. Read a few articles, you know, talking about men and friendships and the nature of men's friendships. That when it comes to banter and jabs and jibes and having fun over drinks, men are particularly good at that. But quite often by middle age, men have very few, if no friends that they can have, that they can talk to, quite frankly, about what they're feeling, how they're feeling, and ask for help. Any insights into that? What's going on there?
Absolutely. It's a common thing that as they get older, they have less friends that they can count on. But I think that even with those really good friends, like you say, the banter will be there where they highlighting that they are stressed, but they don't really show the level of it. So people will understand and know that they're going through a lot, but they don't know the impact of it. I have a very good friend who committed suicide, and I just remember at the funeral, every single person said, if I knew what they were going through, I would have been there, I would have helped, I would have X, Y, Z. Nobody actually knew how stressed he was. Everybody knew he was going through things, but nobody knew. Even his direct family, everybody in his family, no one knew.
Mm. I'm sorry to hear about your friend, Kerry.
Thank you.
Yeah. The symptoms of burnout in men, or the symptoms of someone who is, you know, on the verge of, I don't want to use the word like unraveling, but of someone who's not coping, you know, and finding themselves in extreme crisis. We're obviously having this context in the context of men and perhaps individuals that are not as vocal or open about what they're experiencing. So what should we be tracking and looking out for if we have a sense that, you know, Peter, for instance, is going through a particularly hard time, but we feel as though it might be more than he's letting on?
Right. So with men, they depersonalize and they don't talk about the emotions, where they're cutting feeling and emotion off. So they'll be experiencing a lot of stress, often not sleeping. They'll be tired. They get irritable, maybe angry. They'll look sad, but maybe not depressed. Often we wouldn't see it. Mm-hmm. And then often men will have some kind of alcohol or substance abuse, or they'll be doing something in the extreme, some kind of OCD behavior, excessive gymming or drinking or something that they're diverting their attention to. Mm. So they do make it much harder for us because we don't see it. You know, if you look at the case of Robin Williams, nobody expected that he would ever commit suicide because he seemed happy.
Mm, the actor and comedian. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so that's essentially a change in behavior, something out of the norm, as you say, extreme gymming or even reliance on substances. What else should we be looking at? Because obviously, once we've identified those symptoms, one wants to be of help. You want to either give them some resources that can help them, or any man that's in fact listening and can relate to the comments that you've just made. What comes next?
Absolutely. I think, you know, looking for any behavioral changes where they detach from the people around them, become loners, or you can see excessive behaviors. We want to be looking out for those things. If it's possible to talk to them and communicate emotions, that would be fabulous. Being able to give them any kind of resource or help in some way. Mm-hmm. What neurofeedback would do is, when we do a brain map assessment, we would be able to see the markers for where they're at in terms of their internal happiness, how much they are or aren't sleeping, how stressed they are. If they're experiencing anxiety with it or depression as well, we'd be able to look at those markers.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me more about neurofeedback and what it is that you do.
So we balance brain waves in people's heads. It's totally non-invasive. It's a system where you hear your brain in real time. So wherever we place electrodes on your head, you hear your brain in sound. And it's so quick, you hear your brain in 1/10,000th of a second. So it's almost like your brain is seeing itself in a mirror. And what we do is we teach your brain how to be in the correct state for what it needs. So we'll calm your brain down when you close your eyes to teach your brain this is what you're supposed to do when you sleep. When you focus, we teach your brain to have the busy beaters in the front of your head, so that you can focus and concentrate quicker instead of spending hours trying to reread stuff to take information in. Mm. And basically, we can improve your sleep quality, de-stress, get rid of anxiety, help you to focus, concentrate, make decisions quicker, and connect to your mind-body connection so you know when you need sleep.
Mm-hmm. So what's quite interesting is that you also talk about, you know, brain balancing the brain, or training the brain rather, and therefore allowing your brain to respond in a more efficient, rational mode. And that word rational is a very, very important one when it comes to burnout, when it comes to stress and fatigue, and perhaps even getting to the point where one is thinking about self-harming. What are the long-term effects of sustained stress and burnout in this way? And by the time someone is feeling as though they need to, they'd rather end it. Rationality, give us a sense of why it is difficult to make rational decisions at this point.
So I think long-term, what happens is it'll start with things like insomnia, headaches, migraines, those kinds of things. But long-term, it can become an autoimmune disease. It can become problems physically with your body. Stress will build and build. Eventually, your body will scream at you in some way that you're going to notice, whatever it is for you. Your body has to tell you there's something wrong. And the cost of that is just huge. To try and repair from that once you're there is extreme. So any kind of balance that we can do before then is obviously going to, like what we do in neurofeedback, it's like a control alt delete for your brain, where your brain can let go of those patterns so that when you're being rational, you have time to react. You're not reactive or aggressive or angry or irritable. So we want to try and give your brain and whole being time to contemplate and evaluate each situation correctly.
Yeah, evaluate that situation correctly. You touched on something very, very important, masculinity as a barrier to mental health. How often do you find in your practice that men are averse to accessing things like talk therapy or just traditional therapy? Because there are things that can't be helped or, you know, via exercising or, you know, talking to friends and family. Are men increasingly more open to talk therapy and getting the help of professionals?
I would say more so now than maybe 10 years ago. But 80% of our clients who are men will sleep right through all their brain training sessions and not talk about it. We have a small percentage of men who will share certain things and I'll work through it mentally while we're doing the brain training. But what's great about what we do is you could actually sleep through every single session. As long as your brain gets the information, your brain will balance. And that's why men love what we do.
Yeah, really interesting stuff. Well, Kerry, thank you so much for your time this morning. We appreciate your insights and, of course, bringing us a very, very important conversation, which is looking after ourselves, looking after our brains, looking after and protecting our peace, essentially. And, of course, watching out for the people in our lives who might be vulnerable to stress of this kind and might need help. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Rafina.